Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, I am back. I'm the host, Ron Fitch, for Coast to Coast Radio, and I'm back on
the
air.
We are proud to have 2016 Olympian and the youngest participant in judo, Colton Brown. What's going on, Colton? Listen,
sorry about that, typo. We are going to interview Colton Brown in another 10 to 15 minutes. I want to talk about the Olympics. I wanted to take a couple of days and sit back and digest all the nonsense that happened with Ryan Lochte. And then now you have the incident in baseball with Daryl Strawberry and Dwight Gooden. I want to talk about the excellence of the Olympics. Usain Bolt was terrific. I mean, I want to talk about how great he was. He ran, and it looked like he was jogging in the Olympics. The 100 meters, the 200 meters, he was terrific. Four gold medals. He was just outstanding. The 4x100 relay anchored it. He just dominated. The 100 meters really had to – he was pressed by Justin Gatlin. He was it was a tough race for him. He was able to survive and win that race. And then the 200 meters in the prelims, him and DeGrasse kind of had a little fun. DeGrasse was really racing, and Bolt was jogging. He pointed his finger to him like, oh, you want to be competitive, huh? Okay. So they ran in the 200, and Usain Bolt destroyed him. And it shows how great he is. From 2008 to 2016, he has 9 gold medals. He has 4 this year. He is as good as advertised. He ran a 9.81 to beat Gatlin. He is terrific. But it's been 3 consecutive years that he won the 200 and the 100. Nobody's ever done that. And I weighed this back and forth between who was better, between him and Carlos, because I always believed Carlos was the greatest sprinter to ever walk the face of the earth. Then you have Jesse Owens back in 36. I got to give Bolt the edge only because of the fact that he's longer, and for a guy who's that tall and big, he takes such long strides that he's able to walk away from the competition. And I think that's the difference between him and anybody that's ever lived who has ever raced. Usain Bolt is one of the greatest racers of all time. I'm going to put my reputation on the line on that one. I believe that he, and there's no steroids. They're like, oh, well, maybe, I remember 4 years ago they talked about performance-enhancing drugs. No, that's just natural ability. He's a freak of nature. And he was blessed to just be better than everybody else. And now I want to talk about the greatest Olympian of all time. That would be Michael Phelps, the greatest. None. And I absolutely loved the fact of he came in the Olympics and he just tore it up. Very, very proud of Michael Phelps, how he was able to be himself and win 5 gold medals in the men's 4x200 freestyle, the men's 200 butterfly, the men's 4x100 relay he won with Ryan Lochte. I'll get to him later. And the men's 200 individual medley he won. And then he won a silver in the men's 100 butterfly, which I just thought he was just exhausted. You look at his legacy. He started swimming from 2000, and now it's 2016. 16 years. 29 medals, 23 gold medals. He's leaving on top. He's leaving after his last race winning the gold medal. Amazing. What a career. And then he went through his troubles this past 4 years, and he was able to get help through Ray Lewis helping him out because he's a Baltimore kid. And Ray Lewis helped him out, helped him mentally and spiritually. He's in a good place, got a wife and a kid. And this is a feel-good story. That's a feel-good story. Usain Bolt is a feel-good story. Simone Biles, the gymnast, is a feel-good story. Winning, she won the silver in the women's beam, but she won four gold medals in the women's floor, the women's individual all-around, the women's team, her and Gabby Douglas, the women's vault. She was terrific. Maybe the best feel-good story of all time was Simone Manuel, who won the swimming, won the freestyle, meter freestyle. She's the first African-American to win gold in swimming. If you know the history, you know that's a big, big, big accomplishment, especially back in the 80s when Alton Panis said blacks cannot do good in swimming. They don't have the buoyancy. Well, she had the buoyancy, and she won gold, and she cried, and she was happy for the USA. It was just a great, great, great moment. That was the good. Now the bad was Justin Gatlin, who had a terrific 100-meter race against Usain Bolt, had nothing to be ashamed of. Runs in the 2,000-meter prelim. About 5 meters left, he looks back at the competition, and the competition gained on him, and he didn't even place. He didn't even get in the finals. And he'll be thinking about that one because that's probably his last race. He's gonna think about not the 100 meters, how great and what a great moment that was to win silver, but looking back and seeing the competition. You never look back. Run as hard as you can. I'm not a racing expert, a track and field expert, but run and finish. He didn't finish. So it's bittersweet for him. And then I want to talk about the Brazilian volleyball team, which had a great accomplishment by beating the great Kerry Walsh Jennings and April Walsh, blowing them out, really, in women's volleyball, playing over their heads. I know the ratings were high because of the fact that it was just a great competition. And they got into the finals, and you figure they're going to win because they're in their own home turf in Brazil. And they got destroyed by Lauren Ludwig and Kira Walkenhorst, and they won the gold on, and they weren't even up for it. And I just felt like I don't know if I want to say they laid down, but they just was poor. And you get to the finals, and you're on your home turf, you just beat the favorites, and you don't even show up. That was bad. That was bad. I mean, they got their silver, but you could have got gold. You may never get that moment again. When the iron's hot and you got a chance to win a championship, you got to win because you may never get back again. So they failed, but they did get a silver. And then I want to talk about the bad and the ugly, and I would say that would be Ryan Lochte, who got arrested in Brazil. Him and his swimming team, Jimmy Fagan, and they, all four of those guys were arrested. First of all, they urinated in a gas station. They're about to leave. They vandalized the gas station. A security guard comes out, and we all know the story. Comes out and puts the gun to the guy's head, said, "Listen, don't leave until the cops come. You guys vandalized this place. You're going to pay right now." Now, I'm going to blame Ryan Lochte, but I'm going to blame the security guard. But I'm going to get to Ryan Lochte first. You made a bad situation worse. The cover-up is far worse than the incident. All you had to do was just say, okay, I'm going to get arrested. I'll stay here. And then own up to it, and then it would have been the end of it. He'd have got criticized. But the fact that you lied and said you got robbed made this country, the city of Brazil, looked really bad, and they already had bad PR going in with the Zika virus, and they did such a good job with the Olympics, and from a public relations standpoint, everything came off fantastic. You had some of the greatest athletes of all time in the events. You have great young athletes coming up, and then you have Ryan Lochte messing everything up by vandalizing and lying and saying he got robbed. Now, in a way, he might have, in a roundabout way, it's kind of true because the security guard had no business putting a gun to Ryan Lochte and his teammates. You don't do things like that. and then demand that they pay. They said $50, but I believe it was $400. You let the courts play that out. You don't elicit street justice. I had an issue with that right there, a big issue with Ryan Lochte and then the security guard. And from a public relations standpoint, it was an international incident. And the USA condemned Ryan Lochte, which was smart. And then the Brazilian officials are outraged because you made us look bad. And it put a damper on the Olympics. And Ryan Lochte, I noticed when he did the interview back in the States, he changed his hair from this wild-looking white hair to his normal hair to look almost presidential. And he apologized. He's 110% sorry. He is, but his Speedo and all the other endorsements are gone. I think there's one other endorsement, a fringe endorsement he might get. But his money's gone. He's not going to be able to race. The IODC is going to ban him for the next Olympics. He's already 33. He's not afraid to race anymore. I hope he saved his money. They ain't lied to his own mother, really. And it just looked bad. And that's your invitation. Not that you won the gold with Michael Phelps in the 4x200 meter relay. No. It is that you are the face of ridiculousness and idiocy. But the only thing about Ryan Lochte that'll help him is he did have a reality show, and some producer might be able to make money off this. The disgraced Ryan Lochte, and just follow him around, and he could still be the party animal, and they'll make even more money over that. So he's not done being out of the spotlight. It's just as far as his reputation and being respected, that's out the window. Now, who I do respect is Sydney McLaughlin, the 17-year-old who participated in the 200-meter relay, and she, a hurdle relay, and she was terrific. And I'm going to interview her next week, and she's going to be on my show. She's from Old Bridge, New Jersey. She went to Union Catholic High School. She's still a high schooler. She's going to win gold the next time. She was just a little nervous this time. And also Colton Brown, who fought in a judo competition, the top-ranked 24-year-old in the world, and he lost in the second round. I felt like the guy kind of ran around because the guy got destroyed in the next round. I felt like Colton is going to be a gold medal winner. He is terrific. He's got many, many wins internationally. He went to Japan and beat everybody up. He competed and was on a competitive level against every top fighter in the Olympics, including the guy who won the gold medal. So his future is bright. He's going to win a gold medal. And now, see, I ran the interview by mistake earlier. Now, without further ado, here's Colton Brown.
We are proud to have 2016 Olympian and the youngest participant in judo, Colton Brown. What's going on, Colton? Listen, how does it feel to be an Olympian?
Feels amazing. It's been my dream since I was 12 years old, first stepped on a judo mat, so this is a great feeling. Can't describe it in words.
But you're number one as far as your age group at 24, under 25 in the world.
Yep.
How does that feel?
That's another amazing feeling because, you know, I fought so long to be number one, and it finally happened, and now, hey, I'm headed to Rio on Sunday.
You have an unusual story because of the fact that you were playing football,
yep.
And then all of a sudden, tell the audience what happened.
I was playing Pop Warner football when I was 9 years old, got hit on a wrong tackle, broke my leg, ended up injured,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't do anything. I didn't want to do any sports for 3 years, so I was bedridden, and my dad was like, "All right, listen, you're not gonna sit here and gain a bunch of weight and be a fat kid, so you're gonna do something." And I was like, "No, I'm not gonna do anything." And he forced me to do judo. I never wanted to do judo. I never liked judo, but he forced me to do it. And so I would purposely, intentionally lose every single match for the first year, and then I started liking it, and now we're here.
Yeah, but you also had a trainer. I want you to tell everybody about your trainer, who was a 2-time Olympic trainer,
yep.
And he's Japanese,
yep.
And he's passed. But he trained you.
Yep. Yaneska, he's from Cranford originally. He's 2-time Olympic coach, like you said. He used to train me when I was younger. He always believed in me, always said I would make it to this point. He wrote a letter to the New York Athletic Club, who's now one of my biggest sponsors.
Wow.
And in 2013, and he said, I promise this kid will get on the Olympic team. And if he doesn't, you can punish me for that. And he was right.
But you went to Japan to train. So you trained in Cranford.
Yep.
Japan. You went to Japan to train four times a week.
Yep.
For like 2 months, right?
Yeah. So what I did was, right out of high school, I was applying to San Jose State University. I didn't get in because the application was too late. So my trainer, Yoneska, and my dad were like, well, you're going to go to Japan for 4 months. And I was training, I was actually training 7 hours a day, 6 days a week, every day for 4 months. Toughest experience of my life. No Americans. I didn't speak any Japanese. And I just had to go over there and pretty much fight for my life every day.
But how is Japan? I mean, how's the culture? How do you deal with that?
It's amazing. When I first got there, I hated it because I didn't know how to speak Japanese. I didn't know anyone. I didn't know what to do. And I was getting beat up every day. But now, looking back on it, and after being there many times, I love Japan. They're respectable people. They're perfectionists.
The culture is clean. They're clean people. I love it.
Now, you've been winning the NCAA tournament champion once.
Yep.
Not twice, but three times.
Yep.
You're the three-time national championship. The first time in 2000. Describe the experience.
That experience was an unforgettable one. It was in San Jose. I'm from San Jose. I graduated from San Jose State. So we were actually hosting the event.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And my family came out from New Jersey. So they were in the stands watching me. I had a whole group of people behind me. The stands were packed.
Wow.
And, I think my longest match might have been 35 seconds. I was on that day. So my longest match was 35 seconds. I beat everyone pretty fairly quickly.
But you had the hometown behind you, so that was exciting.
Exactly.
But then the next year, where was it? Because you won again in 2013.
Yeah, it was in Iowa the next year. I won out in Iowa. Same thing. It was, a tougher tournament that year. There were more guys, but you got to do what you got to do.
But now in 2014, you're the hunter. So everybody wants you because you're a two-time champ. How did you deal with being the favorite?
That was rougher because a lot of my matches were closer because now everyone's watching you on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
They know you. They're coming after you. People are training specifically for me. So it was a tough thing to deal with, but I pulled it out. I won my last match in overtime, so I pulled it out.
Now, you made bronze your first tournament after college?
Yes. Before college.
Mm-hmm.
The Senior Nationals.
Okay.
Oh, no, the first NCAA tournament after college. Yeah. That was the first year, I took bronze. And that was
your pro now. How was that?
That was devastating. It was a guy had known that I was coming. I didn't expect it to be a tough tournament. I didn't know what I was getting into. I was like, I'm just going to run through this division. And in the semifinal, I lost to a guy actually from New Jersey.
Wow.
And, I should never have lost to that guy, but I did. And that opened my eyes and made me train harder. And I was like, I'm never losing at this tournament again.
See, I've watched you, and before we get into your journey to the Olympics, I call you the takedown artist. Because every time you're always taking people down, but there's a fundamental characteristic to that.
Yeah.
Explain to the audience who don't really know about judo about the fundamentals of how to do that.
It's tough. It took a lot of years, a lot of technique. When people watch on YouTube, they're like, oh, man, you must just be really physically strong.
Yeah.
And you're flipping people
all
over the place.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, that's what everyone thinks when they first see it. But it's there's a lot more that goes into it. I do about 500 just practice throws a day. Just after practice, I stay after, and I do about 500 throws.
It's like an NBA player taking jump shots. So
exactly.
It's the same thing.
Exactly.
Now you're headed to the Olympics.
Yep.
You fought the top five guys.
Yes. Yep.
You lost all five of them.
Yeah.
But they were all close.
All close matches.
Who was the best one?
The best one was one that I never fought in a match. I fought him in a training camp in Paris. So same situation. But Baker from Japan. I think he's the top guy right now. He's the toughest guy. But like I said, anybody is beatable on any given day, especially in judo. Judo's a weird sport. It takes one moment.
Mm-hmm.
You slip for one moment, that's it. The match is over.
A lot of sports writers are saying because you're on a roll and you're on a hot streak, you're number 21, but you're the sleeper to either get bronze or silver or gold.
Yep.
So, I mean, at 21, you're putting in that extra work before you go. What are you doing extra before you go to Brazil?
A lot of mental work now. We just got done training in Europe for 3 weeks. I was overseas in Europe for 3 weeks training. Then we had a two-week training camp in Boston. But right now it's a mental game. Physically, I'm the best I've ever been. I'm the best I probably will ever be. So it's mental. Mentally, I'm getting myself prepared to do that right now.
What adjustments, when you lost, what adjustments do you think you need to make in those losses?
Mm, again, that's a more mental. I've been winning a bunch of matches and then had a mental lapse halfway through the match or something like that, lost focus for a second, match turned the other way, and then I couldn't get it back. I need to stay focused from the second I land in Rio to the second I step on the mat. Everything. I have to stay, as long as I can stay focused, which has happened on when I put things together, it's when I'm mentally focused.
Now, a lot of NFL teams and players watch tape. Yep. Do you do the same thing where
Absolutely.
You're watching a lot of tape?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, you fought the best guy. You know, you're going to make the adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
You're a confident guy. You believe you're going to get a medal.
Yes, of course.
So what's the key for you now?
Key for me now is to I'm in recovery for my body, so make sure my body's recovered. Make sure I go over there physically as strong as possible, mentally in as good shape as possible, and just go out and do it. I got to believe in myself. It's all about belief, self-belief, like you just said.
See, I believe you're going to get gold. And just how do you feel? Just think, I know you think about this.
Yeah.
They're throwing the gold around you.
They're
playing a national anthem.
Yeah.
You're in the center.
Oh, yeah.
The whole world's watching.
Yeah.
How is that?
That's an incredible feeling. That's an that's been my vision since I was 12 years old. That's been my vision. So in order to have that come true, that's a lifelong dream come true. That's what I work for. That's what I get up at 5 in the morning for every day. That's what I go to bed some nights in tears because I had a bad practice. Like, it is what it is. And that's what I'm working for.
Now, after the Olympics, you're going to get the huge media crush.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to come at you for stuff.
Yeah.
What's your plans after the Olympics?
After the Olympics, I'm taking 2 months off of judo just to heal my body and get ready because I have to go for 4 more years for Tokyo 2020. So I'm going to take a little break, come back to New Jersey, spend time with family, deal with the media, and after that, we'll see what happens.
What about the other stuff? Not just the media, but the other things that happen, like the ladies.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any more Kardashians left, but people that might want to see, but I like him. I saw him on the Wheaties box. How do you deal with that?
I got to stay away from that.
Okay.
I got to stay away from that. I won't, I'm my dad, my grandpa, my whole family, actually, they've instilled pretty good values in me. So when it comes to that kind of stuff, I'm good at standing my ground and staying away.
Listen, your dad, when I was little, I decided I wanted to wrestle him. I said, he looks like a nice guy. And he flipped me over. It is the weirdest experience when you're upside down looking in the air and you lose control of your body.
Yeah.
He was a nice guy. You were a nice guy, but you have a tenacity when you get in there. How do you turn the switch on and off?
Oh, it's easy. It's easy. When I see a mat, when I see a judo mat, I know it's time to go. So my niceness, I put my headphones on and my niceness turns to, hey, I have a job that I need to get done. I'm getting paid to do something. I have to do it.
See, because of your zone focus, I know you're going to win gold. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Well, he didn't win gold, but he's going to. We pre-taped that before he went to Brazil, and that was cool. And he's a great guy. He's going to train extremely hard for 2020 in Tokyo. Now I have to talk about this Daryl Strawberry mess. Oh, we have a caller. Coast to Coast Radio. I'm your host, Ron Fitch. Who's calling?
Hello, Brother Ron. This is Pastor Friday from Richmond, Virginia. How are you?
Oh, my gosh. I've never, ever wanted a person to call more than you. I need help on this. Gooden, Daryl Strawberry. Strawberry comes out because he's concerned. I mean, he's probably frustrated, too, that he believes that Gooden is using again. Gooden is upset, saying, I'm not using. I missed this appearance that we were supposed to do because, I don't know, whatever happened. And he called Strawberry Lucifer, and he said Strawberry is a hypocrite. He's cheating on his wife, and he's doing this and that, and it is ugly. Do you think Strawberry should have aired that out?
Well, I think that all Strawberry did was state the obvious. I watched the 30 for 30 show, and there's no way you can tell me that man is not still on drugs, speaking of Dwight Gooden. He could not sit still. He could not speak coherently. He has that twitch, and it looked like he had that itch. And it looked like as soon as they wrote the check for that show, he was on his way downtown.
Yeah, unfortunately, and you, of all people, would know because you deal with counseling, you deal with people with drug issues, so you would know every single sign, and
you saw that. That's interesting. I never picked it up, but because that's your field and you help people, you picked that up. That's very interesting. I'm glad you told my audience that.
And one thing that he continued to do during that show was he wanted to point out things that Daryl Strawberry had done wrong, as, and, you know, typical with people who are struggling with addiction, because they always feel like someone else caused them to do what they're doing, and someone else is always the reason why. It's because they have no control over themselves. So, you know, he hit him continuing to go back to old issues and things like that. That's just a telltale sign that he's got something going on.
I'm concerned, like, when his son is issuing statements that he's worried about his dad, his ex-lover, and it's just bad in the way he looked. Hey, I saw that. All we could do is say a prayer for the poor guy.
Yeah, I pray. Well, one thing I do know is that there was a time when he did commit his life to Christ, and where he was on the mend. He was on the rebound, yes. And I think that was during the time when he was with the Yankees. He was really getting himself back together, and it looked like he was on the right path. And then, of course, we hadn't seen him for a number of years, and then he pops up on this show, and he looks terrible.
Yeah, his mom passed in 2014. I don't know if that triggered anything.
Yeah, and if anytime you're dealing with, like, substance abuse and things like that, a traumatic event does have the potential to bring you back down that spiral if you don't have strong people around you. But if you have people around you who will allow you access to your demons, then, you're going to go back there, because there's not going to be anybody that can stop you.
Yeah, definitely. You know, on a happier note, getting a little nervous about your Dodgers as a Cub fan. All of a sudden, you're just tearing up, tore through Madison Bumgarner, the third baseman. Rob Seguin hits a home run off Bumgarner, hits two home runs, rushes to the hospital to see the birth of his child. So I guess he had the best day ever, right?
Yeah, of course, of course.
Congratulations
to your Cubs, though.
I have a Cub writer on next week, so this is going to be a very fun interview. He covers the Cubs, and I'm going to express all my paranoid fears and all the things I like. So it's going to be – this is something you definitely want to listen to. I'm going to try to reach out to a Met writer. I want to get more further into this to see what's really going on. I had to talk about the Olympics today, but I'm definitely going to do that. I definitely appreciate your call, and – you know, when the regular season starts in football, you're probably going to be crowing, because against a lot of people's opinions, they think I'm crazy. I really think the Raiders are going to compete for the division against Denver. Denver may take a little step back because they're breaking in their new quarterback, and I don't like giving the Raiders a whole lot of credit or skills, but I'm a real dude when I do my show. I really think they're going to be really good this year, my friend.
Well, our fellowship is going to intensify during the football season, no doubt.
Well, listen, we will talk more about this. I have to let you go, but
yes,
you were fantastic. Thanks for the insights.
Thank you. God bless.
Yeah, I really needed to hear from him, because I wanted to know more. When you're dealing with a person who's a counselor, they can see signs. And when this story broke, I needed to hear from somebody who deals with addiction and issues, you know, and we all have our problems. And I look at whatever I deal with in my life with problems, and I looked at him, it makes me motivated to be a better person and to deal with certain situations that I might have to deal with. So this is a really fascinating week, and I'm glad I'm back on the air. Next Monday I'm going to have the Chicago Cub writer on. We're going to talk Major League Baseball. I'm going to reach out to the Met writer because I want to know more about that, get down to the bottom of that Daryl Strawberry Doc Gooden situation.